There are many ways that we seek guidance. Many ways that we seek guidance. It could be from our parents, from our friends. Maybe you look up to a particular world leader and see them as a source of inspiration for the guidance that they give. There are counsellors at the university. There are financial advisors who give advice and guidance on how to invest your money. You may take guidance from your doctor. Or you may look to the stars and look at the stars in the heavens, as some people do, as many people do in our society, and seek to understand what the stars are saying. For other people, they want to copy the stars who are celebrities and whatever Paris Hilton's doing or whoever it may be. That's their guidance for a lot of people. For other people, it depends on what year it is. If it's the year of the rat or the year of whatever, that shapes how they do things. For other people, they want to follow their heart. That's their guidance. Whatever their heart says, that's what they do. Now, what about Christians? How is it that as Christians, we should make our decisions? How do we know that we're doing the will of God? How do we make the right decisions? Well, that's what this section is about here today. It's about making the decisions to do with marriage, whether to marry or not, and how you work out that decision. And if you're not a Christian, if you're just visiting today, you'll actually see how Christians work through an issue and maybe hopefully learn something about Christianity. Well, let's have a look at the first part of it then. We'll go from verse 25. Hopefully you can see a Bible. Now, about virgins, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment as one who by the Lord's mercy is trustworthy. Now, the word virgin here, it doesn't just mean someone who hasn't had sex. It's a broader term to mean a young unmarried woman, and that generally means they haven't had sex, but it means a young and unmarried woman. And he's still discussing marriage here, and in this case he's continuing to say, what do we do with young unmarried women and marriage? How do we think about that? But one of the things we saw last week when we looked at it was that it was full of commands. And so we saw that Paul gave the command that if you can't control yourself sexually, you're to marry. He also gave the command that if you are married, you're not to divorce your wife or your husband, because that will cause them to sin. And so you're to work at reconciliation or just be separated. But it was a command that he gave. And then he gave another command where he said, if you've got converted and your marriage partner isn't a Christian, well, in this situation, you're not to separate from them. It's not that they're unclean or unholy. No, your marriage is holy in God's sight, and you're to stay with them. But the thing we saw last week was that it was all these commands that he gave. But now when he speaks, he says, I have no command from the Lord, but I give a judgment. And that word for judgment can even be translated as opinion, which isn't as strong as the word judgment and command that goes with it. In fact, when we read through this chapter, we'll see that Paul is not giving commands. Look at the first part of verse 28. He says, but if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. Or look at verse 36. If anyone thinks he is acting improperly towards the virgin he is engaged to, and she is getting on in years, and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He is not sinning. Then in verse 38, so then he who marries the virgin does right, but he who does not marry does even better. Or verse 40, in my judgment she is happier if she stays as she is, that is single, and I think I too have the Spirit of God. You see, that's not the way you talk when you're giving commands, is it? He says you can do this or you can do this. And if you do this one, you're not sinning. If you do this one, you're not sinning. We're looking at a different type of instruction that the apostle gives us here. You see, there is not a commandment for every area of life. There is not a commandment for God for every area of life. Some people think that Christianity is all about commands. Do this, don't do this. And that it's just all about commands. But that's actually not true. And this chapter is one of the big chapters in the Bible where we learn about Christian liberty. We learn about those areas in our life where we are free to choose one thing or the other thing, and both of them are right, and we could do either. And it's not a command, but it's an area of Christian liberty. We're going to be looking at marriage in this chapter, but it's not just marriage. You could look at the issue of where do you live? What job do you have? What career do you have? What church do you belong to? What food do you eat? What clothes do you wear? There's all these areas that the Bible talks about as being liberty, where we can choose this and it's not a matter of sinning. We could choose either of them. Now, commands, they give us straightforward guidance. Do not murder, do not steal, do not slander. They give us a straightforward type of guidance which you can hear, and that's the way God wants to guide you. But what about when you've got liberty like this? When you're at liberty to do several things? And in many ways, come on in, in many ways we live in an age where we've got more choices than ever. So really, we're at liberty more than anyone else, I think, in history, to do a whole range of things. What do we do? Well, the Apostle Paul models for us here how to make these liberty type decisions. When we don't have a command and we're at liberty to do something else, to do several things, how is it that we figure out what's going to be the best thing to do? Well, let's have a look at how the apostle works this out. Verse 26. He says, "Because of the present crisis, I think it is good for you to remain as you are." And so, speaking of unmarried virgins, he says, because of the present crisis, you should remain unmarried. Now, what is this crisis that he's talking about? Well, it's the same word as the word tribulation, which Jesus talks about in Mark 13 and Matthew 24. It doesn't seem to be a unique problem to the Corinthian church. Have a look at the way he describes it here, in verse 29. "What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short." See, this crisis has got to do with the time in which we live being short. Or down at the end of verse 31, "For this world in its present form is passing away." See, what's Paul talking about there? Well, he's just explaining the gospel. He's explaining the message that Jesus taught, and that is that the time in this world will not go on forever. There will be a time when Christ returns to bring the judgment of God. We live in the last days when time is short. And the things in this world, well, they're passing away. And so that's the message that Jesus taught in the Gospels, isn't it? So he's taken the Gospel message and he's saying, well, in view of what the Gospel teaches me, this is how I think you should live. Now, you could go this way, you could go that way, but you know, in view of the Gospel, you need to make your decision that way. And we do need to take this on board. See, when he talks about this tribulation or this crisis, see, we do live in a time of tribulation. We do live in a time of crisis. Do you struggle with sin in your life? I hope you do. Because that's the struggle that we now have. Are you frustrated at the injustice that is in this world? Are you frustrated at speaking the gospel and people not becoming Christians? And seeing how hard the work is? Are you frustrated at the suffering that you experience and that you see happening around you? So that's the crisis that we live in. Are you frustrated at seeing false teachers who teach lies about Christianity and about Jesus, and it just goes on and seems to multiply? So we live in a time of crisis. Now, Paul says, look, that's what the gospel promises us, that we live in a world where we're going to suffer, and in view of this, I make my decision. So Paul answers their question by asking, what does the gospel say about how I use my liberty? And this is what we need to say as well. You need to understand what the gospel is, understand what God's on about in this world, and in areas where you're free, you make a decision based on what you know about God. And that's what he's doing here, and that's what he says them to do. Look at how he applies it in verse 26. Verse 27. No, 26 to 27. "Because of the present crisis, I think it is good for you to remain as you are. Are you married? Do not seek a divorce. Are you unmarried? Do not look for a wife. But if you do marry, you have not sinned. And if a virgin marries, she has not sinned. But those who marry will face many troubles in this life. And I want to spare you this." See, Paul says, there's enough trouble in this world already, and getting married is going to bring you more trouble. Now, don't get me wrong. Last week he was saying that marriage is a great gift and actually part of the way that we can look after each other and keep each other holy, and the way a husband and a wife can serve each other and save each other by keeping each other in holiness. So marriage is a great thing, but yet it does have its difficulties, particularly if you want to serve God. You've got to provide food and shelter and clothing. You've got to train your children. There's disappointment that comes from your children and sickness. There's the argument between spouses. And he says, I'd like to spare you this. And you need to consider it. That being single does give you more time and less other worries to serve God. He's going to come back to that in a moment. So we see how he's starting to apply it here. But then have a look at how he continues in verse 29, where he continues to tease out this idea of the gospel. What I mean, brothers, is that the time is short. From now on, those who have wives should live as if they had none. Those who mourn as if they did not. Those who are happy as if they were not. Those who buy something as if it were not theirs to keep. Those who use the things of this world as not engrossed in them. For this world in its present form is passing away. Now what does he mean here? You know, it's a bit strange, isn't it, to say, if you're married, live as if you're not married. What does that mean? If you mourn, don't mourn. If you're happy, don't be happy. What's he saying? Well, what he's saying is, live for God's kingdom. Live for God's kingdom and don't just be engrossed in the things of this world. So you may well be married, but there's more to life than just being married. See, for some people, getting married is their ultimate goal in life. And once that's done, that's it. They can die in peace. But that's not to be the case for the Christian. For the Christian, marriage is a good gift from God, but we're living for God's kingdom. We've got our hopes set on the future as well. So it's more than just marriage. And when we mourn, we don't just mourn in this world with no hope. We know that God's kingdom will come, and so we don't mourn the way the world mourns. And when we're happy, we just don't rejoice just in the things here and now. We do receive them with God's blessing, and we do praise God for them, but we know that there's more rejoicing to come. And so he says there, if you buy something, buy it as though you're not going to keep it. And if you use something, use it in such a way as you're not engrossed with it. See, for many people, their possessions are what they're engrossed in. In Australia today, I think it's fair to say that most people are living for the here and now, and that they are engrossed in the present. And so what really counts for the good life is to have the flat screen TVs, the plasma screens, whatever they are, to have the good food, the nice car, the holidays, the renovated house. There's these things that people grasp onto and hold onto. But he's saying to us that we shouldn't be like that. Now, I just want to ask you, how tightly do you hold onto the things of this world? Because that's the way he speaks here, isn't it? He says, you know, but not being engrossed with them. How tightly do you hold on to the things? You know, like if your car got stolen, would your life be shattered? If your computer got stolen, would your life be shattered? Now, I'm not saying we should enjoy those things at all. They're the result of sin. But yet, things break, don't they? Things break. Things get lost. You can buy these things and actually you've got to go and buy something else because it actually doesn't fulfil what you need it to. And Paul's saying here that we mustn't hold on to things so tightly that that thing is our life and we hold on to it for dear life because we live for the kingdom to come. And the things of this world are passing away. Now that's how we're to live. And that's how we're to make our decisions based on the gospel. Knowing that, how is it that we make the decisions in our life that we're at liberty to do? There are some things that are commanded, but other things, in view of the gospel, in view of the time in which we live, what type of decision should we make? Well, he now expands the idea of serving God and being free to serve God in the next section. Look at verse 32. I would like you to be free from concern. An unmarried man is concerned about the Lord's affairs, how he can please the Lord. But the married man is concerned about the affairs of this world, how he can please his wife, and his interests are divided. An unmarried woman or virgin is concerned about the Lord's affairs. Her aim is to be devoted to the Lord in body and spirit. But a married woman is concerned about the affairs of this world, how she can please her husband. I'm saying this for your own good, not to restrict you, but that you may live in a right way in undivided devotion to the Lord. Now, the message there is pretty straightforward, isn't it? That if you're single, you're freer to serve God compared to if you're married. If you're married, you've got a whole lot of other responsibilities and you just can't serve God in as many ways because you're still serving God, but it's in a different way by now looking after your family. But he's saying that if you're single, you're freer to do these things. But notice, being single is fine, being married is fine, it doesn't matter. And it's interesting to note, isn't it, that he says that the married man, his interests are divided. And you know, they must be divided. If you're a married man or a married woman, your interests must be to please your wife or your husband as well. One of the failings that happen in Christian ministry is when a person goes into Christian ministry and they're married, but they behave like they're single. And it's done to the detriment of their family. And so their kids don't get looked after, their wife or their spouse doesn't get looked after properly. And I've unfortunately seen it happen in various places where their devotion to the Lord is out of balance for the situation that they find themselves in. But what he's saying here is that we need to think about how are we going to maximise our service to the Lord. That's the basis that he's using, isn't it? The basis is we want to maximise our service to God. How are we going to do it? Well, if you're going to be single, that's going to have these advantages. If you get married, that'll have these advantages. They've both got disadvantages in different ways, but you need to work it out. You need to think about it. And so that's what I want us to think about now, maximising our service to the Lord. He talks about it in terms of having the concern of the Lord. And I just thought we'd think for a moment, what are some of the concerns that we have? I think for a group like you, I can guess what many of your concerns might be. You might have the concern of, are you going to get a career? How are your university studies going and the stress that comes with that? You may have concerns over your family and internal things in your family. You may be concerned about your appearance and the clothes that you have or your status amongst your friends. You may be concerned about the environment or the wars that are happening in the world and injustice. There are many concerns that we have, and many of them are right and proper, but our main concern as Christians is to be that we serve the Lord. I'm not saying we don't have other concerns. We have many concerns in life, but our main concern is that we serve the Lord. And Paul says we're to be concerned about maximising our service to the Lord. It's not just that we've become Christians and say, we'll just serve the Lord a bit. God saved us. Jesus has made us new. Jesus has given us a new life to live for God. Jesus has made us pure and spotless in God's sight. Now, we want to maximise our service for this God. We want to serve him wholeheartedly. And this is what being a Christian is about. So, how is it that we do that? How is it that we make the right decisions so that we do serve God wholeheartedly? Well, the first thing is, we've got to know the gospel. That's what Paul's been saying, isn't it? He's been saying, because of the present crisis, because of what we understand from what Jesus has taught us, because we understand the gospel message, we now know how to use our liberty so that we can maximise our service to God. So that's the first thing. And then we need to make those decisions that promote a life of service to God. So we might be free to do a whole range of things, but we need to make a choice amongst all the things we're free to do, which will help us to serve God more. Now we see this with sportsmen and women, don't we? See, sportsmen and women, they might want to go to the Olympics or something, and what do? They only eat, you know, fruit, vegetables, bran, all these different things that they eat. They're up at 5 o'clock in the morning, running around the track in the frost while everyone else is tucked under their doona. They make all these decisions freely in order to qualify and to compete in the Olympics. Now we need to do the same type of thing. We need to say, what are the decisions that we're going to make so that we can perform to our maximum to serve God? Here's a couple of areas that I thought we could think about. What job to get? You see, what job you get is a matter of freedom. There's no verse in the Bible saying you must have this job or that job. In fact, when we looked at last chapter, it said wherever God has called you, you can stay in that place. You don't have to go moving around. So what type of job you get? You see, you're free to be a doctor, you're free to be a lawyer, you're free to be a librarian, you're free to drive trucks, you're free to deliver milk. You're free to do all those types of jobs. You could do any of them, and it's not sinning to do any of them. You are free. But what you need to do is think, what job is going to actually allow me to serve God more? Now, that's a bit of a change to the way our world thinks about getting a job, isn't it? They tend to think, I want to get the job that's going to give me the most amount of money so that I can do exactly what I want to do. Now, but when it comes to the Bible, well, we're not to think that way. We're to say, no, what job am I going to get that's going to allow me to serve God better? Now, it could be any job. I don't know. You've got to sort that out yourself. You're free to do any job. But that's the decision you need to make. What job is going to allow you to serve God more? Or what about where you live? For many people, they've got their ideal suburb and they just want to choose that they're going to, I've always wanted to live in this suburb here. And so that's their goal in life because they just want to live in that suburb. They want to have the lifestyle of that suburb. But I think really as Christians, we should say, I'm going to use my freedom. I could live anywhere. I'm going to use my freedom to live in a place that's going to allow me to serve God better. And so that's going to consider what churches are in the area that I can be part of, what ministries are there that I could be part of that by living there would help me. Do I need to be a missionary to go overseas and do something? Now, you're free to live anywhere, but when you make that decision and use your freedom that way, you need to do it in a way that's going to maximise your service to God. See, we use our freedom to maximise our service to God. We let the gospel shape how we use our freedom. Now, the last group that he looks at is women. And there's two types of women. There are women who have no choice about who they're going to marry and women who do have a choice. So let's have a look at them. First of all, the women who have a choice, verse 36. If anyone thinks he is acting improperly to the virgin he is engaged to and she is getting on in years and he feels he ought to marry, he should do as he wants. He is not sinning. They should get married. But the man who has settled the matter in his own mind, who is under no compulsion but has control over his own will and who has made up his mind not to marry the virgin, this man does the right thing. So then, the man who marries the virgin does right, and the one who does not marry her does even better. Now, the situation here is of arranged marriages. This is where you are young, your parents and somebody else's parents would be friends, and they would organise you to marry someone else. I have three daughters, and I'm starting to like this idea more and more as an option. I think it'd be a great thing to do, and no doubt it has its advantages and it has its disadvantages. The Bible doesn't actually say that there is one method that we must use. The Bible teaches marriage, but it has arranged marriages and free marriages. It doesn't say you must have one or the other. And it's actually a little hard to know in this passage whether or not it's addressing the father of the girl or the man who's engaged to the girl. It seems it could be translated either way. But either way, the conclusion is the same, that you're free to marry or you're free not to marry. And so the father doesn't have to give his daughter in marriage. He can wait till she's older, and if she wants to marry someone else then she can do that. But it's not that he has to give her away. And if you're engaged in an arranged marriage, it's not that you have to marry. You're free to break it off because you want to serve the Lord this way. But I want us to look in this case at how he makes the decision. Look at verse 36. It says there, if he feels he ought to marry, he ought to do as he wants. In fact, what the Greek says is, if he feels she is past her age, and thus he wills it to be, then what he wills, let him do. It's all about what we will. Or down in verse 39, where it talks about the woman who's free to marry, it says that she is free to marry whoever she wills, or whoever she wishes. Now, the thing that struck me about this is that it seems pretty unspiritual. When you listen to the way that guidance is often spoken about, particularly with marriage, it's spoken of as if you have to get a special word, a sign, or something special in order to know that this is the woman that God has chosen you. But what does it say here? It's just whoever she wishes. You see what Paul doesn't say here when it comes to choosing a spouse. It's just whoever she wishes, whoever you will. I found that striking when I looked at this. And compared to some of the guidance books that I've read, it seems that they say the exact opposite of what Paul says here. That when we're at liberty, we're free to do as we will. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't pray about it, that we don't carefully consider it. Of course you do. He's been saying you've got to consider it in terms of the gospel. You need to understand the gospel and use your liberty in the right way. But that's how we do it. I say this because I don't want us to make guidance harder than it actually is. I don't want guidance to be this impossible thing for us to reach to when the Bible actually seems to make it quite clear. We have our commands which guide us, but we also have our freedom that we make an informed choice based on the gospel. What about for those women who do have a choice? This is Paul's last group. He says, a woman is bound to her husband as long as he lives, but if her husband dies, she is free to marry anyone she wishes, but he must belong to the Lord. Now here we see the woman who is free. And she's free to marry anyone she wishes, but notice there is a command in this one. It's the first command that comes in this section. He must be in the Lord. That is, she must marry a Christian. And so here we see this balance between commands and liberty come together in this final group. And really, that is one way that we can make the mistake between commands and liberty. See, one of the errors we can make is that we can say that there's a command for absolutely everything. And so who you marry has got to be commanded by God. What job you have has got to be commanded by God. And so people make commands for absolutely everything. When the Bible talks about our liberty to make our own choice on some things. So that's one of the areas where we can make a commandment for everything. The other area that we can do is when we say everything is a liberty and we actually ignore the commands that God has made. And that's one of the errors that Christians sometimes make, where they say, oh, you see, I'm at liberty, I can marry anyone I want, therefore I'll marry anyone I want. Well, the Bible actually says, if you're going to marry someone, they've got to be of the opposite sex, unmarried, Christian, and unrelated to you. So there are some guidelines, but then there's this freedom that comes in there. And so we mustn't go those two wrong ways, make everything a commandment, or make everything liberty and ignore God's commands. Obviously, the chief thing we don't want to ignore about God is God himself. Some people think that they're at liberty just to ignore God. And that's not the case. The Bible makes it clear that we're not at liberty just to ignore God. That in fact we're responsible to God. And that serving God is actually more of a command. It's not a liberty that we have. And that's why we'd encourage you to become Christian. But just to conclude, Christianity is not just about following commands blindly. It has commands, but Christianity is about knowing God and understanding the gospel and using this knowledge to maximise our liberty and to maximise our service to God with the liberty that we have.